Fast Model Sports is the world's most versatile basketball coaching software to help power your preparation. Fast Model has developed the industry's best coaching software, including the number one play diagramming and playbook software, FastDraw. FastDraw bridges the gap between whiteboarding and the digital world with an incredibly easy-to-use interface that can be used on both your computer and your iPad, providing maximum portability for your own personal play and drill database. It doesn't stop there. Along with FastDraw, they have other great programs such as FastScout, which I have used, which helps coaches create clean professional scouting reports customized for your team. FastModel is trusted and used by every NBA team and WNBA team and 85% of Division I college teams and over 8,000 high school and youth teams from over 75 countries around the world. In addition to a great product, they also provide basketball coaching resources through their blog and playbank, which features over 5,000 free plays and drills for their online coaching community. For access to these plays and more information, visit FastModelSports.com or follow them on Twitter at FastModel. Hey, welcome to another edition of our Coaching You podcast with the coach, Brendan Sir, and today you will have a treat. Eric Musselman, the new head coach of the Arkansas Razorbacks, is our guest. He is absolutely one of our favorites that we have on our podcast, and you'll see why. We work together, we coach against each other, and we're dear friends. This guy is one of the most dynamic coaches in basketball at any level. He's going to really do a great job with Arkansas, and I think you'll see why. We're going to cover a wide range of topics, from philosophy to summer workouts to his care of, you know, his players to his player development, but most importantly, him as a father, one of the best I know. So I think after this timeout, you're really going to enjoy listening to my friend Mus, Eric Musselman. Let's meet our newest sponsor, Max One. Max One is the all-in-one coaching app that allows you to bring your team to train, communicate, and stay organized all in one easy-to-use spot. One thing I love about Max One is the convenience of every feature. You can easily create individualized workout for each player on your team with videos attached to each workout and deliver them to your athletes' phones, eliminating spreadsheets and paper handouts. Staying true to being an all-in-one platform, the communication features really can't be beat, giving you the ability to send messages to athletes, coaches, and even parents with the touch of a button. Calendars can also be loaded into Max One, allowing you to organize your program with color-coded schedules and events. With my experience as a coach, I know the importance of the athlete-coach connection. Max One gives any coach at any level a way to start showing up where athletes are spending up to 6 hours a day with their eyes fixed on their phone. I was blown away by not only the number of tools offered by Max One, but the seamless ease of use. After talking with the Max One team, I can tell they share that my same passion for helping coaches and athletes get better. With a team of former coaches and athletes, Max One brings valuable expertise to a place of need in the coaching community. I've seen the value of Max One can bring to your program. I wouldn't want you to miss this awesome platform. To see if Max One would be a good fit for your program, head to their website at gomaxone.com and schedule a free 15-minute demo with a Max One program specialist. Mention that Coach Brendan Sir sent you and receive a special 10% off if you decide to purchase this already affordable platform. Again, visit www.gomaxone.com right now to schedule your free demo, and you won't be disappointed. Remember, gomaxone.com. Let's take a second to tell you about one of our partners, Dr. Dish. Dr. Dish basketball shooting machines are the most high-tech and durable basketball shooting machines on the market. Each shooting machine was designed specifically for high-repetition training to allow players to improve through technology. Dr. Jish offers game-like training to give hundreds of shooting reps in just minutes and provide powerful analytics to help players improve their game. Dr. Jish has also introduced Skill Builder, which is the first of its kind in the basketball shooting machine industry that enables players and coaches to stay connected, design and upload training exercises, and instantly receive feedback on their workout, allowing for real-time adjustments and improved performance. It is, without question, the most innovative basketball training machine on the market. To learn more about Dr. Jish, log on to drjishbasketball.com or follow them on Twitter at Dr. Jish B-Ball. Don't forget to mention Coaching You and receive $300 off on your next Dr. Jish purchase. That's right. Mention Coaching You or the podcast and get $300 off your Dr. Jish. Hey, welcome to another Coaching You podcast with the coach, Brendan Sir, and one of my favorite people in the world, Eric Musselman, the new head coach of the University of Arkansas Razorbacks, is my guest. E, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, Coach Sir. Thanks so much for having me on.
As our friend from Orlando, Lou Holtz, once said to us, boy, this would be a great effing job if we didn't have to play games, huh? Boy, oh boy, what a job, huh? Man, oh man. And tell me, the job you did at Nevada was absolutely, you know, amazing. Who would have ever thought when you went there, the results you would have had? No one in basketball could have. It was one of the great things of all time. Now you go into a place where the expectations are off the chart because that's how the Razorback fans are. They're just fabulous sports fans. And how does one deal with that, Eric?
Well, you know, first of all, Coach, obviously the 4 years at Nevada were great, and to, you know, to kind of coach and be a part of building something for 4 years where it grew each year, both on the floor and then just as importantly with the enthusiasm in the community was an incredible 4 years, and now the opportunity here at Arkansas is an amazing opportunity for me as a coach and for our staff when we eventually get our staff complete. But there are expectations. We do have incredible fan base. And it's a unique job because it's not just a community surrounding the university. It's an entire state that has passion for the Razorbacks. And then you add in the fact that there's been a winning tradition here that plays in an incredible conference. So it is a great job, and one that not only myself but my entire family is excited about.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, in following that whole experience for you, tell me, you know, and it's almost like recruiting. All of a sudden, it went from one day maybe something, and then the next day, here comes Arkansas. How did that all play out?
Well, Coach, it was for me. It was unique because, you know, just as you, most of our lives coaching at the NBA level, and then you go to the college level, and you're an assistant coach, and then all of a sudden, when you hit a certain point at a mid-major, opportunities start coming up, and my family and I were really happy at Nevada. And it was going to take like a what we felt like a really special opportunity to leave a really good situation and leave a community that we liked, and that opportunity came at Arkansas. But this March was a little bit different, you know, for my family and I, with different opportunities that were popping up, and everything happened so fast. And then when you talk to and have other opportunities, it's, you know, how are you going to fit? And everything that I do at the college level, I keep bringing back to the NBA. And at the NBA level, you're not going to have success without having a good general manager and good ownership. Mm-hmm. At the collegiate level, you're not going to have success without a great athletic director and a great chancellor / president of the university. And so we found that fit here at Arkansas. But it is – you know, you, at some point in your career, you do have the opportunity to be selective. And I think sometimes when you're younger, you know, you just continue to take whatever job opportunities in front of you. And then you hit a certain point in your career where you don't have to do that. And so the decision-making process becomes much different.
You know, let's go back to Nevada for a second. It came your last 3 years there almost like, you know, you're now going to be on the SEC network all the time. It's one of the greatest things that's ever been invented for college basketball, for the SEC, because, you know, every one of your games is on national TV, basically, which is kind of cool. And so, but when you're at Nevada basketball was must-watch TV. It was something that almost all of your games were on. And what a tribute, because that's a team you couldn't have found on any station in the world, probably even Reno, before you went there. How does that change the way, obviously, then kids from all over the country know about your program? How did that change for you guys? Because before it was New Mexico, you know, a little San Diego State, a little Fresno maybe and stuff, and a little Boise. But then all of a sudden it was Nevada, Nevada, Nevada every game. And I thought that was spectacular for your kids.
I mean, Coach, it was amazing because, you know, our recruiting my first year, the first summer, was really difficult. It was only regional recruiting. It was basically the Bay Area, Sacramento, you know, some Los Angeles. And then all of a sudden, after year three, when we went to the Sweet 16, and going into last year, where I think 28 of our 30 games were on major national television networks, and we kind of became a mid-major team, not at the Gonzaga level, but probably just below that, where people really enjoyed watching our team play. We had star player recognition. Mm-hmm. We promoted our players at on social media. We really promoted the Martin twins and Jordan Caroline, and those three guys in particular, Coach, they became household names in the college basketball world. And they weren't first name even. It was like the Martin twins or then it just became nationally the twins. We would walk through airport. And we'd walk by and I'd hear a guy say, "Hey, there go the twins." And so it became really, really cool because you're right. When I first got in the Mountain West, it was UNLV, New Mexico, San Diego State. Those three programs were the programs that were being promoted from a national. They had name brand recognition. Again, because of the players we had and the style of play, and kind of being a team that people enjoyed watching, it turned Nevada into kind of a name brand product in the college basketball environment.
And you had a great niche because you'd play, you know, at whether it be 10 o'clock or 10:30 Eastern. So you know, I'm getting your games at 9:30 in Baton Rouge, and that was perfect for me. I could still stay all the way to the end and watch those games, and it was amazing. I think the biggest thing, Eric, was how you almost had to go and re-recruit your team last spring, as all three of those kids could have put their name in. They did put their name in, but could have gone to the pros, and I think they all made the right decision.
I think they did too, Coach. And you know, the big thing on that was we want our guys to reach their ultimate goal, which is to play in the NBA. Everyone's got that goal, but then realistically, some guys are going to have to play in Europe. Some guys are going to have to play in the G League. And so, what you try to do with a guy, especially an underclassman, where Cody and Caleb Martin both had another year of grad school to play, and then Jordan Caroline also had another year of eligibility, and they all three tested the NBA waters. And what we did is we just tried to, number one, set up the workouts in a manner where they were going to go to places that would, one, give them great feedback and be honest, and then, two, go to places where they could be have realistic chances meaning there was no real reason for those guys to go to a team that only had a lottery pick to work out, because we had discussed internally with their families and inner circles that maybe Caleb last year, a late first round, mm-hmm. or potentially early second, Cody Martin and Jordan Caroline, more second rounders last summer or last year around this time. And so those were the workouts that we tried to set up and facilitate. And then you've got the added dimension of trying to have those guys not miss class while they're doing as many workouts as possible. And so we devoted a staff member basically where that's all he did for the month of the draft workouts. And then what we just tried to do is call after each workout and get as much feedback for our guys as we could, and then present it to their families for them to make the decision, at least that it would be an educated decision based on a lot of feedback.
Yeah, no, it's a difficult thing. And I know the Martin, the twins are going to Chicago in a week for some workouts and stuff there. What's your expectation? And they'll always be part of your family. What's your expectation for those guys?
You know, it's interesting because as you start talking to NBA GMs and NBA scouts, when you've been there, coach, it make your presentation on the guys is much different. So you take a guy like Cody Martin. I can talk about a role that if I was an NBA coach, where he would fit in. In other words, yep. He could fit in the last 2 minutes of the first quarter and the first 4 minutes of the second quarter, and he can play three different positions. And so you can get some rest with your starters by having a guy who can play positionless basketball and can play a little point guard for 2 minutes. Then maybe he can slide over the small forward and defend a premier score on the opposing teams. And then he can come out. And then the benefit of having a guy like that in practice throughout the course of an 82-game season, a guy that could guard a power forward in practice or guard a point guard in practice, and the value that he would have on an NBA roster. So I think all three of those guys can play in the league, but they're also all three going to need to go to a situation where what they bring to the table is valued, because they all have one certain thing that I think makes him special. Jordan Caroline, it's his effort, getting loose balls. He's an improved three-point shooter. Caleb Martin's a dynamic scorer who I feel can be a dynamic defender at the NBA level. And we've talked about Cody's value as a player being basically like a utility infielder who can play every position on a baseball diamond.
Yeah, no, and I think your point about having been a coach for years in the NBA gives you incredible street cred, as far as they are going to listen to you, that when you say something to them, they know you know what you're talking about. Where many college coaches, they're just promoting their guys to help them, and we get that. But they don't know what it takes. They don't know, even if they played it, some of the teams that are the final eight teams in the country, that when you get them, they don't even know how to defend, right? And they're playing for elite coaches. And so you have to start over as a pro coach from zero with those guys. You understand that, but those guys don't. They don't understand that, those kids have not been prepared, frankly, for how to play in the pro games. But what I like about the way you've coached in college is that you run your team like a pro team. You run pro sets, you talk to them like they're pro players, and I think that that is so much in preparation for what they're, and I think that's going to be huge at Arkansas with the players you're going to attract there.
We hope so, coach. And I think the biggest thing is just, with today's student athletes or today's NBA player, like, it's got to be a partnership. And it doesn't mean that you lack discipline if you have partnership with your ball club. Actually, I think you can have more discipline if you partnership with them. In other words, we would be on a team bus going to take the team to dinner. I'd walk to the back of the bus and just ask the players, like, what type of food you guys want, and then let us find a restaurant in the area that suits what you guys want. And so it's a little thing that makes the team feel like they have ownership in it. And then it's the same thing even on pick and rolls, like you brought up, our, you know, an NBA style. We play no zone defense at all because I do think it helps prepare the guys for the next level, and it's also what I'm most familiar and comfortable with teaching. But even on pick and roll situations, if we're playing a dynamic point guard, I'll tell the team, like, hey, here's plan A, here's plan B. Do you guys have a plan C? We might hard hedge or trap as plan A. Plan B might be a switch. And then I'll ask the guys, like, do you guys have a third thought process that we want to work on this week leading up to the game? Mm-hmm. And I think when you get your players input, even in a timeout, you know, we'll ask our guys, hey, you know, what set do you like best on a wing pick and roll, you know, the action on the weak side? What do you guys think will work? Because oftentimes, if you have intelligent players, they can see more than your assistant coaches because they're being defended by the actions and they see open holes in the opposing team's defense. So I think it's always important, you know, to try to get as much player feedback as possible, especially from your players that have high basketball IQ.
Well, I think what you're also doing, Mus, is you're helping them, you're educating them. If you just tell them every day, as one coach that we work with uses the terminology, he says, if you script everything for them, guess what? In the game, there are no scripts. And all of a sudden, when they have to now play what he calls messy basketball, when someone takes you out of what you're wanting to do, they have to be able to know how to play. And I think that's what you're doing. You're helping them learn how to play. And I think too many guys try to script every drill out. That's not the way basketball is. It's a reality show of things that you never planned for happening. And now how do you react? How do you make quick decisions? And I think that's what you're really preparing you guys for. That's the NBA.
Yeah, you have to. I think, you know, a lot of the guys now are, you know, they're teaching concepts. When you look at the Warriors, a lot of stuff that the Golden State's doing is basically out of concepts. And I agree with that, Coach, that basketball, you can never plan for what's going to happen over a 40-minute college game or a 40-minute NBA game. There's always detours and roadblocks that happen. Every little four-minute segment, there's something new that happens that you had no clue that it was going to, you know, whether it's your own player getting into foul trouble, an opposing team getting into foul trouble, someone on one team getting hot, getting in a zone where you've got to try to milk that player as much as possible. And I felt like the greatest coaches that I've worked with or greatest coaches that I've coached against have always been those coaches that have a feel during the course of the game.
You mentioned coaches you worked with. You and I had the opportunity to work with our legendary friend and mentor, Chuck Daly, with the Magic. Tell me what you learned from Chuck. What was good? What was, you know, what you enjoyed about it?
So much. I think one.
Other than him buying every meal for us.
That was number one.
Yeah.
The free meals at the top end of every restaurant in every big city.
Yep.
The thing that looking back now with Coach Daly was, I really felt like as much as he coached our team, he was coaching our staff. Mm-hmm. And you would know much more than me, Coach, because you were with him way more years and at different time frames with him. But certainly being with him his last year of coaching, and the only year that I was with him, I really, really felt like he was trying to prepare all of us that were under his little umbrella as coaches as much as he was preparing our team to win games. But with the players, I've never seen such a master of being a player's coach where the players loved playing for him, but also being a disciplinarian and having his team execute late games. He was a basketball genius, but more so he was a people genius in how to deal with all the different things that come up over an 82-game season.
Eric, when you worked with him, he was 69 years old. Okay, how incredible is that? To take you back to when you said, you know, I was with him at different stages. So when I'm with him with the Pistons for 4 years, you know, we go through this incredible run of championships. The very first practice I go to, I joined their team the first week of January in 1989 because Dick Versace became the head coach of the Pacers. So I left the Hawks to go there as a top assistant. Now, imagine walking in to a team in January, and the two teams, the team I was with, the Hawks and the Pistons, hate each other. Okay. and I'm walking in and I'm going there and I'm going to be a top assistant over Brendan Malone, who's been there from the start of the season. Okay. So that in itself is dicey. We only have two people on the staff. And the first day we go to practice, he says, okay, you run practice. I don't even know guys' names, right? You know, and I said, what the hell you want me to run practice? Because they're tired of listening to me. And he walks away, as Chuck would do. He walks away, and here I go. And he knew exactly what he was doing. He wanted to be able to take a step back. He wanted them to hear a different voice, and then he would step in whenever he wanted to and coach the team. Right? So we did this for 4 years. If you walked into our practice and you didn't know anyone, you were from a foreign country, you say, oh, that guy, that's Chuck Daly. And it was me because I'm running everything. All right. And then he would just, he'd coach the games. And then all of a sudden we go to Orlando, and that's, you know, several years later, he's 67. So we go to first practice. I'm ready to run practice. And he goes, he pushes my hand back and he takes over. And for 2 years, he coached everything because he wanted to show those people, new people, that he could still do it. Never said a word to me. I just couldn't. I just read it. And he was just so phenomenal. You know, Eric, how about this? We're in Detroit and here's Isaiah Thomas, who's like, you know, we all love. And then there's Bill Laimbeer, and they're playing pick and roll defense, and we're hard hedge everything. And all of a sudden, I'm like giving my scout report first game, and he goes, I say, wait, we're going to hedge this. And like Chuck says, hold on, Isaiah, how do you want to defend it? And it wasn't what I said. And he goes, that's what we're going to do. And it's the first time I've ever had a coach in basketball. And, I worked with UB, the guys you love, UB, Mike Fratello. That's my background. They've never asked the guys, hey, how do you want to defend something, right? And you know what? It was the most brilliant thing I've ever heard, you know, because now they participate, as you mentioned, with, you know, being able, Eric, to give ownership to them and make a partnership. That is the most amazing thing that I think he brought to my life about the partnership of coaching.
Yeah, I mean, he was such a genius. And the cool thing is when you talk to former players, guys that played for him, you know, having worked with Rick Mahorn with the Hawks, this, you know, Rick loved Coach Daly so much. One, because he thought he cared about him as a person. One, he talked to him about things other than basketball. But on the floor, it's those examples that you talk about, Isaiah, and having input on pick and roll. There's just so many things that, you know, that he taught everybody. And obviously, because you have a photographic memory, you didn't really need to bring paper on the floor for scouting reports. But I do remember, you probably don't even know this, Coach, that one of the first game preps that we had when I was with Orlando, you were obviously doing all the preps, but I had a station and I had notes that I was carrying out on the floor that were on the opposing teams and what that station was going to consist of. Mm-hmm. And he asked me what I was doing with paper, you know, and I told him what it was, and he goes, put that away. It's got to be memorized. So that was my first. I'll never bring a sheet of paper on a practice floor again because, you know, here this idol or this bigger-than-life coach, he's like, what are you doing? Throw the paper in the trash can and go out there and coach. But it was another great lesson of preparation and how you got to be ready.
You went to a much better school than Chuck and I. You went to the University of San Diego, a great Jesuit school. Chuck and I went to state colleges. He's at Bloomsburg. I'm at Montclair State. We cheated our way through. I had paper in my pocket all the time. And so, 'cause, and trust, But you know what? The thing that BJ Armstrong, you know, we had, remember that second year in Orlando, and BJ, to this day, every time we talk, he'll say, how did Chuck do that? How did Chuck do that? He'll cite stories of Chuck that he had as one player. This guy's with Phil Jackson for years, and he says, I had Chuck Daly and Phil Jackson. He holds them equal, you know, and it's just so neat. That is, Eric, I think, the biggest thing that you bring to coaching for these young players today is who think that they're, you know, tomorrow they're in the NBA, they want to skip steps, the whole deal. What you bring to them is the credibility of that you've been everywhere and that, you know, you know how to get them there, but most importantly, the deep caring you have for them. And that is, if you trust me, as Chuck always used to say, if you trust me, listen to me, I'll help you get to, as you said in the beginning, to reach your potential. And that's a fair deal, I think.
For it really is. And I think, too, Coach, that, like, the trust is, like, earned through, you know, the guy seeing how you treat him on a daily basis. And I think along with, you know, the credibility factor also is like, being truthful. Like, you know, every college player and every roster thinks that they're an NBA player. And in reality, you know, that's not the case, as we all know, that there's very few guys, you know, that are going to be part of this draft that are going to last more than 3 years in the league.
Absolutely.
And so, especially at the college level, like, you've got to, that's why education becomes so important, and life skill lessons that you can help with your guys are so important. And obviously when you're coaching in the G League or the minor leagues, you know, your job is basically to try to get that player to the next level from a basketball standpoint. But at the college level, it's about how do you prepare the student athlete for life when basketball's done, and can you help them at least further their career so that they're bouncing the ball a little bit longer beyond college if that's what they want. But more importantly, it's what does a player say to you 20 years from now as opposed to just the next 3 or 4 years when they're done playing for you.
The impact must that you make on players at this level is far greater than we can at the pro level. We both understand that. And that's what makes it exciting, I think, for us, that we can do that. But
Coach, are you saying that you don't think that I had an impact on Ron Artest / Better World Peace when I was on with him in Sacramento?
You know, I thought Artest you really related to well. Gilbert Arenas, you know, I'm a little sure, but you know, I always say I developed Dominique Wilkins, right, and I ended up more with Gerald Wilkins, you know. But I don't know. But I don't, you know. The thing is that. You know, hey, Doc Rivers, I drafted. Okay, we love Doc. You worked for him, you know, and I drafted him when he was 20 years old. I remember second round pick of the Hawks, 31st pick, and we did his contract, and he gave him $80,000 non guaranteed. True story.
Wow.
And now he's the highest paid coach in the NBA. And approximately 20 years ago, I went to him and I said, I really think you could be a hell of a coach. And he turned to me, and I often tell the story because as a player, 13 years, an NBA player, he said to me, hey, Brendan, go F yourself. The last thing I want to do is ever coach. And I tried to explain to him he had charisma, he had ability to create relationships, he had credibility with players, but most of all, he was a basketball savant. But the communication, I thought, was off the charts. And he still echoed those, you know, F words to me. But and now we're 21 years later, he's coaching, and he came and spoke at Coaching You last summer in Vegas, and he said the greatest thing I've ever done is coach. And he says, I like it more than when I played. And for a player to say he likes coaching more than playing, that tells you a lot of how good the guy is. You know, but Doc is an extraordinary human being and a hell of a guy, great pop and a you know, great dad and everything. And I think that's another thing that we talk about, Eric, is, and I think to really be a great coach nowadays, especially at the collegiate level, I think you have to be a great parent. I know, and I'm not being And I just believe that, because how can you coach someone else's kids if you don't coach your own kids well? And you're one of the most extraordinary fathers I know. And I love that about you, Michael and Matthew and my girlfriend, Mariah. My God, what you do with your kids, and you make them so much integral part. I think that your players sense of how important family is. And that, I think, Eric, is so strong.
I think like the biggest thing, coach, is with my two sons, for instance, I would one of the reasons I wanted the Nevada job so bad was because it was a 3.5 hour drive.
I remember
from my sons and their home in the Bay Area. And I would literally probably 10 to 13 times a year for Matthew's entire 4-year high school career, I would drive across that mountain. It takes 3.5 hours. I would watch a high school game, which takes about 1 hour and 20 minutes, and then I would get back in the car and drive back. And it was exhausting, and a lot of times through snowstorms over the Sierra mountains, a lot of times chain control over those mountains, and near blizzard conditions. But my players knew that. Like, they knew if I was leaving practice 15 minutes early, where I was going. And our family, like, your players are your family. And then your wife becomes part of your current team. My sons are part of the team. And I think you're right. I think you got to be a great husband and a great father before you can even be a great coach, because if you can't take care of the stuff at home, you got no chance with your team.
I really believe that. And so this is for our listeners that didn't come to Vegas to hear Doc, the greatest coaching tip ever gotten at a clinic, and all those fools that don't go to clinics, any clinic, to learn, to keep being a continuous learner, shame on you. But here, Doc said his topic he wanted to speak on, I've never had a coach ask me to do this, crisis management and leadership during that time.
Unbelievable.
Like at a basketball clinic, are you kidding? That's a CEO talk, and here's the coaching point he left. He said, I coached my son, Austin. And he said, but what I learned about that was I learned that as a coach, you need to coach every player on your team like it's your own son and daughter. I said, wow. And I think about some of the coaches in different sports that are having problems because of their bulliness or their verbal abuse to their players. That doesn't mean you don't lose your temper and that you don't coach them hard and be demanding. I'm not talking about that. But we are that way with our own children. But coach them with civility and love. And when he said that, it all of a sudden struck a chord. And I said, you know what? We got to coach our players like they're our own children. And we'll be much better for doing that.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. And even, it's really interesting, coach, because obviously, getting back to college basketball, your recruiting visits, everybody would like a commitment when a guy comes on campus. And when I sat back, and kind of observed, there was 3 years I wasn't working but was hanging around college programs, and then I was an assistant for 3 years. One of the things that I felt uncomfortable at times was when a student athlete was being in a room and you're trying to close them, and I kept thinking about my two sons. It kept going through my head all the time, and I would actually break out in a sweat thinking about the pressure if my son was kind of pushed into making a decision on the spot. And so from a recruiting standpoint, I always remember that when guys are on visits.
How about that?
And it's just stuck with me, and I get emotional thinking about one of my two sons in a room with some grown adults. And
who can really know how to manipulate,
to
right?
Out of them.
And they're really good at manipulating and stuff like that.
It's hard. It's hard. And so we've kind of tried to take a little bit of the reverse of not as much pressure.
How about
and
that?
It seems to work
how about
when you do it that way.
You know, and it's really fascinating, you know, and everyone has their own style, but I kind of like that. And you know what? I think, Erica, I think it's got to fit your personality. And hey, there's no one more tougher and more aggressive than you, but you have also a great sense of people. And for you to recognize that, I think is absolutely brilliant. And I think it's, and obviously it's bode you really well. I mean, because the players that you get to come there, I think speaks for itself, you know. That's fascinating and stuff. What now? You were nice enough to leave LSU to take the Nevada job and allow me to slide into your spot. So we really appreciate that, and allow me to coach Ben Simmons for a year, which was you know, really life changing. You know, to all the players I've worked with, he was just so unique, so fascinating. And you said something before that really struck a chord. You know of Ben, and you didn't get to actually coach him like you wanted to. But the thing that impressed me about him most was he was a genius, an absolute genius, basketball. You know, he knew more than me, way more. It wasn't even close. And this kid was, it's all natural. And so one day I was teaching them pick and roll defense in the summertime. We were going to Australia. I'd only met with him like for 3 days. And all of a sudden, the second day I taught it, I must have said something slightly different. And he said, "Coach, very respectfully, don't you mean this?" And I said, and I thought about it, and he said, basically, he was saying, I just said something that was wrong. That, and I said, "Ben, you're absolutely right. Thank you for correcting me." And the other players, like, eyeballs popped out, and some of the coaches looked at me like, but he was right. And for me to say, "No, I'm right, you're wrong," would have been the kiss of death for me as a coach, in my opinion. And I don't know why coaches have a hard time with that.
I think your players actually love it when you show vulnerability. I think that it's you know, whether it's a press conference and you take blame for something, or it can be behind closed doors where you tell the guys like, "Hey, you know, that pick and roll that we used last night, that's all on me. It backfired. We had too many gaps in how we prepare." You're going to get your guys to play harder, you know, the next game. And you bring up Ben Simmons, and having watched him in high school, like, when you have an innate feel for the game like those guys do, and there's very few that have it, those guys, you got to let you want their input, because, like you said, they're often smarter than we are as coaches. And Keith Smart played for me, and the value that Keith would give me during games was incredible. And I think, you know, all of us have players throughout the course of our coaching careers where we just say, like, "That guy's really smart." Like Earl Boykins, I wanted him to talk in timeouts because of how smart he was and had such a great feel for the game and how he viewed the game. I think that oftentimes those guys that are superstars, they feel and see the game much different, even than good coaches do.
And you know what was great about Ben is it showed he was listening to me the day before. You know, it wasn't like, you know, "Hey man, you're wrong." No, he was listening, and he said, "Didn't you tell us this yesterday?" And that meant he was listening, and that was really engaging and stuff. And you know, I think the really neat thing about the coaching at this level is you get every day. It's something new. And I don't mean the off the court things. I mean the stuff even on the court. And you see something, you see a guy developing. I know player development's always been a huge part, and you've taken players and really helped them get to another level. And I know that's going to really continue at Arkansas. How do you go about it?
I think the first thing is with a player is all right, identify his strengths and compliment him over and over and over and over and over on his strengths, because you never want a player not to feel good. If it's a great shooter, you want him to have incredible off the charts confidence with his shooting. But then also, after you've laid the foundation that, "Hey, I've identified that you're great at this one thing, now where are the holes? And how do we try to close the gap on those holes. It might be a player who is weak going to his offhand. And how do you get the player to, number one, accept, all right, I have a deficiency in this area? And I think once you can show the player that through film, through statistics, now you got the guy, and now it becomes, all right, now what are the drills to try to get him to improve that deficiency, all the while continuing his one strength to continue that to get better and better? Because the players that I think are the hardest to coach are the guys that don't have one thing that sets them apart, whether it's a loose ball getter, whether it's a shooter, whether it's a guy with great speed, whether it's a great shot blocker. It's the guys that don't do something really well that are hardest to coach. But I think from a player development standpoint, it's one, they got to trust you. Two, they have to think that you think they're a good player. Like it's really hard to improve a player if that particular player thinks that hey, my coaching staff doesn't think that I'm that good. So I think you really got to build them up even before you can start talking about, hey, these are the areas that we've got to improve on. Because really, player development is getting better at what you're good at and then also getting better at those areas that you lack.
No, I think that's outstanding. Now, the SEC, when you got here to LSU, boy, it was a heck of a conference. And now it's even going another level. And I think mainly because of the great coaches in this conference. I think coaches in college basketball dictate how good a conference can become because players are attracted to good coaches. It's even gotten better with you and Buzz, you know, coming in here, you know, and I'm a big Nate Oates fan going to Alabama. You know, I think the coaching is so strong in this league. And that's exciting for you too, right?
I don't think there's any doubt. You know, one of the things that when my family and I sat down and talked about the opportunity to come to Arkansas, it was, this is awesome. Like, I'm going to have an opportunity to coach against Coach Calipari and some of the great coaches, you know, in this conference. And you know, having coached in the NBA, when you're standing on the sideline and you're coaching against you know, Coach Riley or Phil Jackson or whoever, like those games, you know, you as a coach, you get fired up for those games. You want to compete against the very best. And certainly in this conference you're talking about right now, I mean, it's as good as any conference in the country, coaching wise, player talent wise. You're talking about a conference that potentially is going to get 7-8 teams into the tournament. So it's going to be a big time challenge from a recruiting standpoint. And as you know better than anyone, Brennan, it's just like how it's so hard to win a game.
You're absolutely right.
It is so hard to win just one game.
You know, I think you know, that was, you know, and we see it all the time. People say, oh, so-and-so will win this playoff series in six. They'll win in seven. Or when we used to have to go out and take a West Coast trip, you know, whether we were in Orlando or you were in Atlanta, and you take a West Coast trip, or when you were coaching in Golden State or SAC and you had to go east, and people say, oh, you have a five-game trip, you'll win three of them. And Chuck used to have a great saying, you got to win one game before you win two. and I, you know, again, the brilliance of it, you know, I mean, yeah, you got to win one first. You know, you can't win three out of four before you win one. And it's so hard to get players to focus on the next game. You know, what do you do now with a new program once you get all your players in there? How are you going to approach the summer with them and then going into the fall?
You know, I mean, number one, everyone uses the word culture, but yeah. Certainly it's going to, you know, like it's going to start in the weight room because our strength coach is going to have a lot of time with guys. And so there's weight room stuff, there's conditioning stuff, there's mental stuff, whether it's, you know, we've always done the mile time. And, you know, some people say in basketball, you don't need to do the mile time. But to me, it's a mental thing more than it is even a physical thing. But, you know, we want our guys to, because it's our first year, our 2 5-week summer sessions will be different here at Arkansas than they would have been if I was going to go back to Nevada for a fifth year.
Right.
Because our guys already knew the system and they knew the style of play and they knew who I was and I knew who they are as people. And so we're going to have to do a lot more team bonding stuff. We're going to have to do a lot more stuff off the floor where we get to know one another as people. So it'll be, you know, more things at my house. It'll be things that we did at Nevada, but tapered off towards the end, spin classes and things of that nature to have fun, but yet also compete. Our staff will do competitive stuff with the guys as well. And then on the floor, there's going to be a lot of terminology stuff. It's going to be a lot of introducing, you know, how we play pick and rolls and how we defend cross screens and down screen actions and those type of things, because we don't want to get to October and start doing that stuff. So in our allotted time frame, we will really, really try to get our guys to understand the identity that we want to play with on both sides of the ball.
Well, I'm very, very, very confident. Confident would be a bad word. I know that you're going to have them ready, and your experience at Arkansas is going to be spectacular. The people there are going to fall in love with you, your family. Your style of play will be incredible, and I found it to be by far the most intimidating arena in the league to go into. I welcome going to Kentucky before that place, I'm telling you. And I might even fly in just to see you call the Hogs. I might do that myself. But
the Musselman household has practiced that enough, B. So we're ready to call the Hogs at any moment. I can tell you that.
Isn't that awesome? I tell you what. But hey, I'm so happy for you, man. And it's going to be a great experience for you, and the fans are going to really enjoy it. And I can't wish you enough. And every time we seem to do a podcast, every time you take a new job, but we'll have to catch up sooner than that. We don't need to wait till the next one. Okay, so you're going to be there a long time, Eric. Thank you so much, brother.
Thanks so much for having me on, Coach.
Mus, thank you so much. Great coach. He's going to be phenomenal at Arkansas, and really watch this program as it continues to just rise and go ahead. It's really it's a great coaching hire for the SEC and for Arkansas, and it makes that basketball conference just one of the absolute strongest in the country. But I want to remind everyone, till May 31, this is your last discount price of $349 for Coaching You VIP, our experience out in Vegas, July 8 and 9. Make sure you sign up. We only limit it to about 100 seats, so make sure you sign up. We're more than halfway there. So you want to get in, $349. The price on June 1 jumps to $399. Okay, so we're trying to help you, you know, to save money as you go along. And really, I want to emphasize, you get all the videos of all our incredible speakers. You're going to get two meals with everyone there and our staff. You're going to be able to have Dry Fit t-shirt with Coaching You on it, and you're going to get a Coaching You notebook. And plus, opportunities to, in our community, to visit with some of the best coaches in the world. It's one of my favorite times of the year, because it just is a gathering of people that really love the game and want to continue to strive and get better. So make sure May 31 is your cutoff for the $349. Then we're jumping to $399. Go to coachingyoulive.com, coachingyoulive.com to register. Till next week, this is the coach, Brendan Serr.